Founder Brass Sacks.
Hi, good afternoon. Are you a guest?
Yes, welcome.
Good afternoon.
All right. That your guest is very, very knowledgeable. Yeah, he is very knowledgeable. I know him. I did work with him, you know. He's very knowledgeable. There are a lot of people that don't want to join the union because of what they hear from other people. Kind of about what's going on with the vaccines now. They're about six vaccines, right? I want to ask you a question. You know the talk that's going on now with the people say that there's change in needle? Is this change in needle only for the COVID vaccine? Or is for all other vaccines?
Well, I can't answer the question. It has been explained that in this particular process, there's an extraction needle, and then there's an injection needle.
Yes, but some people saying that this is doctors that I hear claiming saying that it's dope with vaccines. I have children that this is the
doctors are saying what?
This is the process of vaccines giving that you change the needle tape. When I used to take my child to the doctor when he was very young to get vaccines, the needle tape never changed. So that's why I asked if this is the process only for the COVID. If this is the process only for the COVID, I do understand. Right? I've seen other people taking the COVID vaccine overseas and the needle. Some needle are changing and some are not changing. Right?
So you've seen some change.
Yeah, okay. Some change, right? And some are not changing. I mean, with the same vaccine. So that means it's the person that is administrating the vaccine that is got a choice to change or not to change. I don't know what the protocol is. If some protocol say you have to change, you know, some people do it, some people not do it. So that is why a lot of people are skeptical, right? Reason why I'm saying that, right? Years ago, we know what happened with people not taking vaccines, and we know about what people, they take the vaccines and what happened, right? There was death both ways. You understand? Death both ways. So they can't blame the public if the public didn't want to take the vaccine. They can't kick off doors and tell people.
Well, I want to suggest to you that I hear a lot of people are also the view that it is worth the while to take the vaccine because the alternative to taking the vaccine, they don't want to face that alternative, which is that you can get very sick from catching the COVID-19 virus. So, you know, and there are people already who are very ill. Some people have died here, as you know. So what are you going to do? You're going to take, if you want to take your chances, then that's up to you. But there are other people Well, you could say hope and prayer. But you know, the alternative to that is that something is available to mitigate the kind of harm that can come your way. And if it's possible, then you're going to do that. Because for some people, there is a fair amount of suffering involved, you know.
Yeah.
It is not, and everybody doesn't die. But it can go through a long period of, intubated and that sort of thing.
You know, Dennis, they say it's good for people over 65. And some people say it's not good for people over 65. So if you got a grandmother that is 97 years old, you be telling your grandmother, you be telling yourself, it'd be like playing dice. You got two dice in your hand. You try, and you trying to get two S's. And you get two sticks. I don't know how it's played dice. Your grandmother gone. She's gone. That way. It hurtful, you know. It hurtful both ways. It hurtful. And people trying to force things from people. Force her to take it. And other people trying to force people.
Nobody's forcing anything on you.
No, I mean like they come and say, oh, it is good. It is good.
Nobody is forcing anything. People, I don't understand what's so big about somebody telling you, in their judgment, these are the reasons why you should take it. You get information from people who tell you that, and you also have people who are telling you don't take it.
Yes.
So you are in the middle, and you have to make a decision for yourself. That's as simple as that.
Both of them doing it. I mean, both of them doing it. I mean, it's
so you're encountering a lot of that out there on the ground?
Yes. Yes, it is. I mean, a lot of people ask me about the needles. I was a medic for 9 years, right? And I administered vaccines, and I never saw it by my superiors. I was never taught it, right? I waited for some information from overseas on it. Some people told me that some do change the needles and some don't. This is the same vaccine, right? I mean, people just need information. The public just need information. Just don't hide it.
You so what understand? Information is being hidden on the vaccine, in your judgment?
Side effects and what the vaccine is made of.
You see that you have been a medic for years. You can't go and research that yourself. Who do you want to give you that information?
Listen to me, Edgar, you asking that. Side effects, these people didn't know. Because everyone is, every 10 person, side effects is not going to be same. There are new side effects happening every 2 days. New side effects, just adding to all the time. New side effects. I just waiting to hear.
Like what?
Is one of them.
Like what? What are these side effects?
First, it start with the fever. You know, the normal vaccines, it come with fever, bump, you know, itching, swelling, and side effects. The same one you mentioned before, Bell's paralysis and so on. Side effects is adding liver damage, kidney damage, Dennis. Side effects is adding almost every 2 days.
I am unaware. You
will be unaware. Like if I come out, you ask me something, but you read it, I will be unaware about that. But
yeah, but you know, I would think that Barbados has a whole host of doctors who are some in the public sector and some in the private, many in the private sector.
Yeah.
Many of these doctors have been speaking about the vaccine. I've actually heard one of the more vocal doctors in the country, Dr. Adrian Lord, speaking about this matter. And therefore, I am not hearing from the people that I speak to all this concern about side effects changing every 2 days. I haven't heard that. The first time I'm hearing that. And they are endorsing the use of the vaccine. I think we need to be very careful. I mean, in putting information out there, you gotta be factual. If you are going to argue that you are seeing all this information, send me the websites that you have been seeing all of this information on. Let me look at it and see, you know, whether there's credibility to what is being said or not. I don't want to be out there putting information before the public that is not supported. Okay? This is Down to Brass Tacks, going until 2 o'clock. Wayne Warren, Acting General Secretary of the National Union of Public Workers, is with us. Someone sent me a note here. This person says that they missed a part of the conversation on pensions, Wayne. But they heard somebody saying that the public servant salaries are docked 25% to contribute to pensions, and that is why central government salaries are lower than SOE salaries. They wanted to know whether the person speaking can say which law that comes from, and where can we find this written legal agreement? Is there? What exactly is the situation?
I recall the lady speaking, and some of the things were not accurate, but I didn't want to respond immediately. In terms, the state-owned enterprises basically follow the same salary structure as the boards, even if you're looking at clerical management level, the super scales and the Z scales, they adopt the same type of scales. They don't go outside of that because, remember, a lot of these state-owned enterprises get their transfers from the consolidated fund. So therefore, they're not permitted to just set their own salaries and so forth. So a clerical officer in government, for example, will get the same pay as a clerical officer with a board. So they're fairly standardized in terms of the pay. The 25% she speak of, I can tell you if you are seconded to a regional organization or international, for example, If a public officer, was seconded to power for 2 years, it's agreed that company would pay in 25% of the person's salary to the treasury so that when they return, that pensionable period of 2 years will still be continuous. It will not be broken for pensionable purposes. That is where a 25% factor comes in. If you are succumbing, a 25% is paid in. I think with the transition to Brad, there was a discussion that they would need to pay in 25% to preserve the pension of those employees who transferred to the Barbados Revenue Authority who are formerly public officers. But in the real sense, I am not a real public officer. So I have a deduction up to 25%. The government has to absorb that cost and pensions. That's probably she's speaking to, that the government, in terms of the state pension, do absorb the cost of that pension scheme to the treasury. But the officer does not suffer a 25% reduction from salary. What we argue, though, that pension is a deferred earning, and it's taken as a part of your salary, and you get it on retirement. And that was the obvious argument that we advanced in terms of preserving pensions in the public sector, even the boards. So the statement is not quite accurate in terms of what the caller indicated.
Okay. On another matter here, I did raise with someone in government yesterday a concern that was raised with me by a caller who said that there was this business establishment where someone had tested positive, and there was a concern among people working in that place that it hadn't been closed, and according to the allegation, it hadn't been sanitized. Now, the response that I got from the government official was that the government is wary of shutting down business places as soon as people, somebody tests positive, and that they would seek to address that particular matter through the contact tracing method. Now, that sounds all well and good, huh?
Mm-hmm.
But I think most of us have recognized that this contact tracing situation has also been overwhelmed. So there is a degree of uncertainty and some measure of fear in some places where people are testing positive. Indeed, subsequent to that, I now see somebody saying to me that their neighbor told them that their son, who works at the same place, has said that some staff have tested positive for COVID, but no shutdown of the business has been done. And, you know, we are not in the business here of calling the names of businesses, but all I can say is that I can appreciate that both customers and the people who work in these establishments would have a degree of fear or concern once that news is spreading on the ground. And you know how fast this information spreads? No, it is just a WhatsApp away. So we wait and see. I mean, we saw something happen weeks ago with one of the hardware stores where this similar policy was adopted. And then eventually, days later, they had to close. Yeah. So I wait to see where this one goes.
Yeah, David, there's an area of concern. Even in public sector, some nurses and other persons were stating that they did the responsible thing there, came into contact with some person, and then obviously they will report to the department what happened, and then they self-quarantine or rate and test, and then if you should be returning to work before that. Now, there has to be clear COVID policies. If you're talking about primary versus secondary contact, they must be spelled out clearly so you don't have the businesses to determine or interpret it, and then the next thing you know, as you say, have an outbreak and you're forced to shut. The inevitable still happens. So it has to be a clear policy if there's secondary contact, or if there's a criteria, say if the person working is isolated in a department and they're so isolated that you can't justify the continuation of the business in that the person works in an isolated area, they were only a secondary contact or whatever. But if you don't have clear policies and businesses interpreting it, it's going to be to their detriment still.
And then businesses are taking their cue from the COVID unit, though. Yeah, they're taking their cue from government. I don't get the impression that they are just doing these things all on their own. I'm just saying that if the contact tracing has broken down to the degree that we believe it has, because there are a lot of people who tell you it's taking a long time for people to contact trace them, then, I mean, what happens in the interim, especially with something that is as contagious as this this British variant is, you know? But anyhow, we'll see.
Brother David, it's juggling between economics and the safety of the nation. I think that's what it comes into, juggling. But then, do you compromise it? How much can you compromise the health and safety for the economic side of it in terms of that?
Okay, down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, welcome.
I'm on the air.
You are.
Okay, my question, my point I'm raising is actually not Mr. Waldron. It's a completely different matter. Just before the lunchtime news that we just had, you did play the episode 8 of the COVID Nights. I don't know if it's an ad and information public by the Government Information Service of Barbados. Yes, same morning I had the opportunity of hearing episode number 7 when I was on my way to get a little exercise. And I would like to play just a short part of that episode for you and get your feedback on what you think about this. Okay? That okay with you?
Yes, okay.
Okay.
The following program is a work of fiction. Any resemblance to actual person...
Funny line. That is my girl to the end of, but not for too long.
Kimmer, get your hand off of me. I tell you, keep far from around me.
My grandmother's sick, Leon. You really ain't on school for real? I just want some affection.
Don't bring your grandmother in this. And what affection you could want? You think I forget what I hear you and Spock talking about? You ain't for German women, no? You want to be about the place with these stinky little girls and making me look like a fool. Kimar, I tell you the last time that I didn't take in this from you no more.
Yeah, I lower your voice, so let me explain.
Explain what? You didn't care when you were about the red and white women? Don't come around me.
Yeah, I can't do with this right now. I can't even
say... Mr. Ellis?
Yes, ma'am. I can hear you.
Yes. So I'm just saying, what are we trying to infer there in that? This is something put out by the Government Information Service of Barbados.
Just turn it off now because it's keeping a bit of noise in the background.
Yeah. I'm going to put it somewhere else. I don't really think that that is the right format for that kind of inference in this day and age. I mean...
What are you offended by?
I think that it's sending a wrong note as to where we're addressing tourists that come to the island making some assumptions that within a very small space of time we have referred to the German women, these stinking girls, and these and these white women. And I don't know where it is going with that, but I don't think that was necessary to put into a Government Information Service put out there. That's my feedback. What is your impression?
I understand your concern. I mean, you don't want to stigmatize any group of people in pursuit of the goal of trying to educate people and to raise awareness. Mm-hmm. And that interpretation is one that people would have coming out of what you played a short while ago.
That was what I was left with. I'm just saying that, in my opinion, that was not necessary to go in that. I think it is a good means of getting out to the people what you're trying to educate them about, but I don't think that was the best way to go about it in these times. Because that was definitely an inference to me. And I take a long time to take offense of anything, but I found that was offensive.
Yes, okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Good afternoon, David. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm okay.
Yeah. I believe that you are aware that pensioners would not be having their checks on Monday to begin their spending and to allocating their funds where they have to go. Are you aware?
No, I'm not aware.
Yes, the checks have not been delivered by the postman as a custom on Thursdays, neither today. And they said that they won't be delivered until the 18th. Now, I don't think this is fair to old age pensioners at all from the National Insurance. And the reason why the checks were not delivered or would not be delivering, the reason given by the Director of Finance, I think Mr. Ian Carrington, you can punch holes in it. It doesn't make any sense. Because people will, older folks will congregate whenever they get their checks. And all they have to do is to stay six feet away from each other when they go to the post office or wherever they go, sanitize and wear their mask. So I think it's unfair to pensioners not to be having their checks to begin their spending on Monday and to have to wait on the Thursday. And I am asking, I'm calling on the Home Affairs Minister, Mr. Abrams, to rescind all what has happened and open the post office on Monday or even Sunday night and bring in the postman to sort the checks and have them delivered as early as 7 o'clock Monday morning so that people can have their checks to go to the supermarket and do what I have to do before the shutdown on Saturday and Sunday next week. What do you think about that? What would be your response?
The rationale for this, I believe, is to try to keep the elderly away from the lines and that sort of thing.
But that doesn't make sense. It don't make sense because you still got to get the check on when they come on the 18th and go back and do the same thing that he's saying that they can't. So that cannot be the rationale. It's foolishness. Mm. I don't know if you agree with me. Because you're going to congregate whenever you get the check, but the getting it late is unfair. And the rationale cannot be accepted by me and other people. So you can continue. I told the Home Affairs Minister, put the postman back to work with the checks on Monday. I believe that the checks may not have been printed and the post office does not have them. That's my belief. But if I'm right and the post office does not have the checks, I don't blame the post office. Blame the National Insurance. But if the checks have been printed, get the checks in the post office to be delivered on Monday, which is the official date of the 15th, and let the older pensioners get their checks to do their business. I am one of them.
All right, sir. I return to this issue, which was raised by the person who sent me this note about the 25% being a doctor contribute to pensions. They want to know where can we find this written legal agreement, and if it does exist, are public servants given this in writing when they are appointed? What are the actuarial bases for this pension arrangement? Is it shown anywhere on a pay slip? And how does a person track what their benefit is at any given time? Finally, is this a mandatory scheme? Can a person opt out of having it and be given the 25% to be invested in, say, a private pension plan, paying a better return? They continue to say this. What they mean is that these pensions are unfunded. Government grants a pension to its officers as a condition of service, says the writer. The pension is not contributory. As such, what the IMF is saying is that this cannot continue, as it's a hit on the fiscal, actually a 300 plus million hit on the fiscal. Any further comment on that, Mr. Warren?
Well, one can say that if only 8% of persons were above the NAS threshold, around 49 plus, the only 8% that earns that kind of salary in terms of earnings, it means then that those below the NAS threshold is taken care of. They actually going to get one pension, which usually will be the NAS. So then the Treasury does not have to pay anything. If you're looking at some 92% of the persons, it means the Treasury does not have to look up for those persons. It's just the 8%. The only other time the Treasury will be paying outside of that arrangement is the invalidity that goes from the date you came up medically unfit onto the old age. But otherwise, if the data is saying the information that only 8% of public officers earn above the NAS ceiling, it will suggest to me that a significant amount of persons by virtue of one pension, which is NAS, actually paying towards their pension. Because if the NAS zeros out the in excess of the state pension, it means then that you're already paying towards your pension. So it's only 8%. And then those that are medically unfit that may will be getting it before it is due, before the NAS old age date. So even though it's looked at as a cost on paper, in actual effect, the majority of public officers, 90%, 92% of public officers, by virtue of being NAS, is paying towards their pension, because the other pension then is below that, the state pension. So these are arguments you have to look at. The other issue with these pensions is that they're not looking at the politician pensions who, after 2 terms or 8 years, whichever is shorter, get their full pension. And if you're going to bring some equity to the whole burden of the state reform, I think reform should be consistent. It's always the working class that seem to be the ones that bring the brunt. If you want to bring equity and a level of transparency, look at the reform for all public sector pensions. I don't think there should be a privileged and unprivileged group. So this is something, too, that should be looked at.
Okay.